This episode of Crucial Tech is brought to you by Cyber Protection Magazine. We will attend the ITSA 360 conference in Germany this year as a publication of record, and we are actively seeking sponsors. Want to reach 20,000 people in just a few days? This would be the most cost-effective means. And if you want to know why, listen to today's podcast. Welcome to Crucial Tech. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and today we've got a little bit of an unusual show. It's going to be longer than normal, simply because the scope of the interviews and what we're doing is going to take a little bit longer, and it's going to be part of a larger article that I'm writing for next week on Cyber Protection Magazine. So be on the lookout for that. This podcast will be incorporated into that article as well. We're talking about marketing in the cybersecurity arena. Now, a lot of people don't like marketing, but it's how things get sold. It's how you know what to buy and where to buy it and how much it's going to cost and whether you want it or not. It's an important process. And the fact of the matter is that cybersecurity and technology in general does a really bad job of marketing. Most of the time, it's what I call field of dreams marketing. If we build it, someone will buy it. And in certain cases, that's been true. I mean, there's that fear of missing out of the new technology that you want. Technology companies have relied on things like the fear of missing out of the new big thing. That's what drove social media and Facebook and MySpace and X, used to be known as Twitter. People wanted to get into it because, they heard so many other people are into it. It drove the growth of the iPhone and the iPod and all of the success that Macintosh and Microsoft have had over the years has been based on fear of missing out. But over the decades, the promises that technology companies have made have not been fulfilled by the products they've produced. There's a lot of disappointment. There's a lot of news recently about generative AI and how that was supposed to be the next big thing. Microsoft invested $10 billion into ChatGPT, but a recent report said that ChatGPT says if they don't get significant new investment soon, they're going to go bankrupt after the first of the year. The fact of the matter is that the public that they were hoping would use this stuff isn't using it. And it's following the same lead as cryptocurrency and NFTs, except it's crashing even faster. And that's just in the case of generative AI. Now, when talking about cybersecurity, it's a little bit different. Everybody needs it. And nobody understands it. At least not most people don't understand it. So they're relying on cybersecurity companies to actually, you know, give them some sort of idea of what it is they sell and how it fixes the problem that they may not know they have. And cybersecurity companies don't really know how to explain that. They know how to talk amongst themselves. They know how to copy everybody else's marketing messages. They know how to feel comfortable in their own skin, but they don't feel comfortable in talking to the people that really need it. And the people that really need it are generally not their customers. There was a report that came out recently that showed that Fortune 1000 companies, which is the primary target of cybersecurity companies, are either cutting back or freezing their cybersecurity market budget spend, which means they're not going to buy new products. They're not going to buy new tools, they're not going to buy new services, unless, of course, those services can explain and what they do and show that they do it well. Whereas the rest of the market, outside of the Fortune 1000, which represents about 80% of the potential market, is virtually excluded from the marketing strategy of these companies. So if the Fortune 1000 companies, which are the low-hanging fruit, go away, these companies are going to have to learn how to talk to general customers. And when we say general customers, I mean people that own grocery stores, people who own bookstores, people who own construction companies. All of them need some sort of cybersecurity tools and services, but they may not know what it is they need. And I decided to talk to a couple of people. They were supposed to be on the same call, but one of them, Grant Wernick, the CEO of Fletch, wasn't able to make it because he got stuck on a BART train. So the other guy I was talking to was Richard Steenan, who is the founder and chief analyst for a company called IT Harvest. He's been an industry analyst, especially in cybersecurity, for a very long time. And he has his IT Harvest covers pretty much every known cybersecurity company in the world, thousands of them. He talks about how many people they've hired, what their market numbers are, who's investing in them, and he's breaking them down into all different kinds of categories. So it's a really good resource if you want to find out what's going on in the industry. So he's the first guy up. We're going to talk to him on a broader level about what the industry needs to do to break through to that group of customers that the industry isn't dealing with. So let's move over to Richard right now. Richard, how many companies are you covering now at IT Harvest?
This morning, we are tracking 3,561.
All right. And is that a comprehensive number of cybersecurity companies or just the ones worth covering?
Oh, gosh. So first of all, we don't make any judgments about whether somebody's worth covering. We'll cover you if you've got a website and a LinkedIn page and employees of any sort, usually just the founders. But it's a measure of how many we are able to discover. And that I can't say that's the number because we discover new vendors every day, probably at the rate of about 10 a day. And we do that through looking at conferences. And of course, new fundings happen all the time. And we wouldn't have been aware of two guys in Israel with an idea until they announced that they got their seed funding. So there could be as many as 5,000, but I think it's closer to 4,500 in total.
Yeah, it sure seems like around 5,000, because we keep getting, we've had to develop a policy that if you're not a sponsor and we already covered you within a year, you're not going to get another shot.
Yeah, that's wise. Yeah,
because we've got to try and reach out to everyone and see what's going on. Now, right. Most of the time with what we're doing, we can have two or three companies that can be included in a particular issue that we're doing. Yep. But it's really difficult for publications to actually to cover everything, right. Especially when everyone is saying the same thing, which brings me to the issue of our discussion today. There was a report that came out in 2022, and a couple of companies brought it to my attention that the Fortune 1000 companies, which most cybersecurity companies are going to target because simply they will buy anything from anyone just to make sure they haven't missed out on something. They've had the budgets to do that. But over the past couple of years, some things have changed. And this one report that I'm looking at from One Identity, it's not from them, they hired somebody to do that. And there are lies, damn lies, and then market research. but I went to the direct report that these companies were talking about. And one of the points was that 96% of the companies reporting have multiple identity management tools, which causes a lot of inefficiencies. And 99% report that identity tool inefficiencies have direct cost for their organization. So when it comes down to whether they're going to buy something, they are now starting to step back. And the time it takes to make a sale is starting to extend. I don't know how long it's been, but it seems to me that a lot of security companies who offer a tool or a service can generally get in pretty quick. And that seems to be changing, but that's in the Fortune 1000. And from the numbers I've been able to see on a conservative level, 80% of the market is made up of small to medium enterprises. And they are really underserved. And there are a few companies out there like Fletch, which is one of the reasons I wanted them in here, that specifically target small to medium enterprises. They will work with the larger ones, but only if they give them a call. Their marketing plan is to go out and reach as many of the small to medium enterprises as they can, because that's where the need is. And those companies don't buy a lot of tools. They'll buy maybe 7, 8, maybe 9. And you have to prove that that stuff works. And I'm wondering, from your perspective in covering their industry, if that's affecting the growth of the industry at all.
So, great question, because I totally agree, the SMB and down towards the small businesses, which wouldn't even have 7 tools, it represents the biggest untapped potential market for cybersecurity. And it's untapped because you can't sell direct to them, because you can't find them.
Yeah.
And even if you can look at a Google map and look at businesses and you go, hey, there's a bowling alley, they need security. There's a bakery, they need security. There's a manufacturer of boxes, they need security. And then you'd look them up on LinkedIn. They wouldn't have a LinkedIn page because they're not online. You can find their website. Maybe you'll find a letter from the president. That's the only contact you'll have, is the president of the company. Okay. So now you call the president of a excavating company and you say, would you like to buy a firewall? And they go, well, we're not building any fire safe, rooms today. So no, I don't need a firewall. It's just like, it's impossible to sell directly to them. And I keep thinking about the publisher or printer of my books, who last year, right when my book was going into production, suffered a ransomware attack. And they're a pretty big company, right? They've got, I think, 13 plants around the United States, one of the last remaining book printers in the U.S. And they shut everything down for that 3-week period. And interestingly, the Heidelberg presses came back within 3 days, but it took longer for my book, which, because I set up on a digital press, meaning a typing machine. And I was very impressed that they had backups to recover from in the first place. But who would you have sold that to? They don't have a security department. They've got IT. They've got desktops. They have to get files transferred around. They give me a location of an FTP server to drop off my files. So they got some IT, but they won't have a CISO. They won't have any idea that they're subject to ransomware attacks. So the opportunity is there. And I've seen companies fail over and over and over, going back 20 years when Symantec briefed me on their new SMB strategy. How we're just going to take all the stuff that we sell to the enterprise and package it so we can sell it to the SMB. Okay, great. But, your cost of sales is pretty high and much more than you're going to get out of a sale to a small company. And it just never works. But you're right. New companies are getting funded now that are going after the SMB. The owners and operators of small companies do spend a lot of time online, right? They use Instagram. They're now reachable. You might have to get at them through Facebook, right? But guaranteed they're not going to be looking for security. So you have to somehow identify them as business owners and start hammering them with a message. I've noticed on Reddit recently that I see ThreatLocker ads every time I'm on Reddit. So they're making some approaches there. The approach now is got to be the internet, 1-2-3 SaaS model. Click here, sign up, click here, we tell you what you need, click here and pay, and you're done, and you got some security. And there are a handful of companies that are doing that. reports I get are their cost of sales are still very high, up to $2,000 in 2 months to close a sale.
Wow.
Which is really hard when you're selling something for $600 a month.
Yeah. So in that process, though, you mentioned the message. And most of these companies are made up of people who have got experience in security. And they're trying to sell to people who are not insecure.
Right.
And but they're not. Are they changing their message in order to reach this uneducated mass?
They do change it. Yeah. So they use, peace of mind, let us worry about it kind of messaging. In other words, they're just leveraging the fact that the subjects don't want to worry about it, right? They hear about it. Yeah. They might see it on the news at night and they might think, am I going to get attacked or have a breach? And they're selling to the peace of mind, aspects of that. Just like an insurance company would show images of tornadoes and branches falling on your fence. They can do that. Now, mind you, they don't advertise on TV yet. They're starting to advertise on radio. The big guys, CrowdStrike, is advertising on TV, but that's usually targeted at, there's probably one customer they're trying to get, and they know that person watches that channel at that time. So they're running ads, so they see it.
And the channel that they're trying to reach is really the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. They think the MSSPs are that channel. But it turns out what they really are is an MSSP themselves, right? Yeah. They have to manage the customer's infrastructure in some way and deploy stuff or, have cloud-based stuff that it's easy. You just give us your router address and we'll install some software to redirect all your traffic through our proxies and keep you safe.
Something I learned last year when I was doing some stuff with Honeywell and Rockwell. Companies like that have discovered that their own security operations center can be a profit center for them. So essentially they're offering an MSSP to their partners and customers. At the same time, MSSPs are trying to sell their service to Rockwell and Honeywell, So you mentioned that the cost of getting a sale is getting too high for what you can afford to pay.
Right.
But there are ways of getting around that as long as there is a media channel to get that information out.
Yeah, if you could, then you pay a lot for to get that cost of sale down, cost of acquisition.
But I don't see a lot of support for the media in the industry.
I agree. It's pretty sad. Certainly a lot of support for Google ads and definitely less support for LinkedIn ads, right? So that's what you're competing with.
You know how much money we've made from Google ads?
Negative.
No, we've made some money, but not yet enough to buy a cup of coffee to share between us.
Do you know how much I spent on Google ads accidentally for my book, Curmudgeon?
No.
I spent $13,000. Somehow, even though I told the ad to only run for 5 days, it ran for 4 months. It generated over 100,000 clicks and not a single sale of the book. In other words, it was all fraudulent clicks. And there's no recourse, right? Google wouldn't give me my money back. It was my mistake. Click fraud is great for them. They made $13,000 and they're the only beneficiary of that click fraud.
We've been running across, because we do our special editions for trade shows.
Right.
And we're actually the publication of record for ITSA 360.
Nice.
And we thought, well, this is great. You can get yourself in front of 20,000 people because you know it's going to be distributed to all the attendees.
Right.
And everyone wants to be in it, but only as a contributed article, not a sponsored article.
Interesting.
And we keep hearing from them, okay, it's a great idea, but we're only interested in earned media. Do you know where that term came from?
I don't.
Okay. Came from Nokia in the late 1990s.
Huh.
He says, and they were describing why their marketing was so successful. It says, we have a triad of marketing programs. We have owned media, which is our website and our marketing materials.
Yep.
There is paid for media, which is advertising. And then we have earned media, which is public relations, getting stories in newspapers,
right,
publications.
Right.
But the thing is you've got to have all three.
Yeah.
If you're missing one or two, it's like a three-legged stool that misses one or two legs. It just falls over.
Right. Okay? Yeah.
But as we've been talking to companies, large or small, their primary focus is on the earned media. And I keep telling them, yeah, but if there is no media, you can't earn anything. For the security industry, for the longest time, they've just been getting free money, essentially, because the problem is so bad.
Yep. They need quotes.
For so long a time that people say, well, we got to buy it. We don't know what it does or how it works or whether it's going to work for us. We got to buy it.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's.
And they get free media coverage constantly. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But that's starting to go away. I'm running down a story right now that I'm having a really hard time to do, but there is a company called Rapitoni. And what they do is they provide cloud services for realtors in California Central Valley.
Okay.
They went down about a month ago. And it doesn't look like it's ransomware from what I can figure out. It looks like it's just a denial of service.
Yep.
But as a result, all the realtors in the Central Valley cannot reach the database of potential buyers and sellers, which is critical to their business.
Right.
And they've been down for a month now and no sign of coming back.
Wow.
Yeah. And there is a competing service for all of California, but in order to get the listings for the Central Valley, you have to go through Rapitoni, and Rapitoni isn't talking. But it's obvious that they've got a severe security problem, yep, and they don't know what to do about it. And those are the kind of people. And I happen to, you know, Cyber Protection Magazine has a lot of realtors that are reading it because they're trying to get up to speed on it.
Huh.
So I mean, we're actually reaching the people that these companies that you were talking about, you know, the contractors that are out there, you know, do we need a firewall? Well, we'll help you understand what a firewall is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what we do. But, and this is starting to sound like a whine. I didn't want it to, but it just seems to me that we're entering into a time where the cybersecurity industry is going to be facing a reckoning if they don't change to a more effective way of telling their story.
Well, I certainly agree. The story has to be told better. Of course, I've kind of given up on telling the story myself. That when I started blogging 20 years ago now, you know, I feel like I was just shouting into the wind and warning people about what they have to do and being very prescriptive, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just after years and years of doing that, I realized, well, not the right people, the people who need to know are not reading my blog and they're never going to find it, right? Because they're not looking for security news. So I gave up on that and I just have to live with it. This is just how our industry works, right? The only way to educate somebody about security is for them to have a devastating or just embarrassing breach. The only way your friend on Facebook is going to implement two-factor authentication is after their account is stolen.
Yeah.
and they have to tell everybody, hey, you know, I'm really not selling Ray-Ban sunglasses, which seems to be the motivation for the attackers. Then they'll implement two-factor, and they might, if they're really smart people, you know, IQ over 120, they might go, huh, I should do that on Twitter as well and implement the two-factor authentication.
Yeah, interesting thing. There's been a couple of stories about people losing their LinkedIn accounts.
Yeah, I've seen those. And, I think thanks to your posting, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, appreciate that. But I noticed in one of several discussions I've had on Reddit with people, where they're complaining that they can't get their account back.
Yeah.
My first question I ask is, did you have multi-factor authentication enabled? No. Okay. Well, why not? It's too much of a hassle.
Yeah.
And it should be LinkedIn's responsibility to protect my account.
Yeah.
And my response to them was, well, that's what putting multi-factor authentication is all about. That's what they implement to protect your account, and you didn't use it.
Yeah.
And that's when they really get obscene and block me.
It's very worrisome about having LinkedIn accounts stolen. Worrisome to me, because that's all that's left to me, right? It's Facebook's useless, Twitter's useless, but LinkedIn is super, super valuable. And that would be a scary thing. Luckily, they've got, you know, presumably all of Microsoft security behind them.
What's your recommendation to companies to weather this storm of slowing corporate investment in cybersecurity? Maybe not in the investment from VCs, but in people buying the technology.
Look at there is, as far as their needs for a total addressable market, there's an infinite pool to draw from. So the key is finding the people who will benefit the most from your product. So you have to do and it's not blanket the world. It's not say we're only going to go after Fortune 1000. It's to create these niches, where they used to call them crossing the chasm, bowling alleys. So you dominate a niche, right? It might be education. It might be state and local government. It might be manufacturing. And you dominate that before branching off into the other niches. So even though your product doesn't change, if you're automotive versus oil and gas, you have to have the expertise in your target market. So you don't have a bunch of salespeople that used to sell to California banks all of a sudden selling to Detroit automotive suppliers. You have people with domain expertise, so that, you know, they can build those relationships.
Okay, that was Richard Steiner from IT Harvest. Our next guest is Grant Wernick, the CEO of Fletch. Their website is fletch.io. And they are an unusual company in the cybersecurity area in that most companies, what they do is they help you identify where you've been breached and how much has been taken. They don't necessarily provide the protection of it, especially if you've bought a product that's supposed to protect you, but it doesn't protect everything. What Fletch does is it will take a look at what the threats are that are in the wild right now that haven't necessarily hit you, and allow you to say, okay, look, this is the threat and this is what they're looking for and this is the area of your data they're going to hit. So if you know that in advance, you can say, okay, well, we need to clean that up right now. We need to fix this. So it is an early warning system for cybersecurity. And that's what makes it unusual. But what also makes it unusual is that it is sold almost exclusively to small and medium enterprises. The 80% of the market that most of the industry is just pretty much ignoring altogether. I think that's fascinating. And that's why I wanted to talk to him for this particular episode of Crucial Tech and for the article that I'm working on. They're addressing a very important area in the world. And it's something, and they're learning how to do this. They're becoming an example for the rest of the industry, and it's being reflected in the amount of interest they're getting from the investor class. They are starting to get investment, and they are about ready to launch their paid for product. So let's jump over to him and let's put it into context of what I talked with Richard about and hear what Grant has to say.
So, but the first thing I wanted to talk to you about is, yeah, I mean, you are growing. You are one of the few companies that I've met that have started out wanting to reach the SME market.
Yeah.
Which, based on the numbers that I've found on a conservative level, that's 80% of the market that is being totally ignored by cybersecurity.
Yeah.
And it's been easy to do that simply because the low-hanging fruit is the Fortune 1000, because up until this point, they buy everything just because they don't want to miss out on it. And it doesn't really cost that much. But now it's starting to fall into a problem in that, like this report that I was looking at that I shared with you, is more than 90% of the tools and services that they are paying for, they're not using for a variety of reasons. And the number one is that they have to manage different administrative models across multiple applications. And that's causing specific problems in that they need a unified platform for access and identity management. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, since your company is doing so well, what is it you're doing that's attracting the users?
So access and identity management has gotten a checkbox from so many of the compliance frameworks and security frameworks. And so now it's in budgets and people are like, well, why wouldn't I have this thing? But for a small to medium enterprise, I actually don't think they need any specialty tools. I think they can just get started with Microsoft SSO or Google SSO. Or if they really want to get a little bit a little higher up, okay, go get Okta. It's like, you guys at your smaller stages, you don't have to overthink this. And then for passwords that don't fit in that stuff, run LastPass or run 1Password. It's just like, you can do things much more scrappy than go buy some of these more expensive identity access management products. I do think those products are very important as you scale a company into hundreds of people. Like, I'd be surprised to see a company in the 400 person to 500 person realm who doesn't have a more advanced model. But for these smaller SMEs, 100 to like 300 employees, I think they can get by with things like that. But surprisingly, most I talk to have barely adopted SSO. Like, they're still in username and password. When you go outside the United States and all over the world, which we do, Fletch is used in 18 plus countries right now. And it's like, I'm so always shocked that the number of people were the first reason for them to start thinking of SSO, because Fletch gives you visibility into what your people are doing and the products they're using, which is something that you do have very expensive products that do that. SaaS visibility products for shadow IT. And it's like, well, we actually do it. We do it very inexpensively. And so what is Fletch doing that is really different and has been quite successful with this audience, with this SME audience, is we're giving them stuff that works in under 10 seconds. We're giving them something that they can just turn on and it starts seeing their external posture and correlating that with the threat landscape. It gives them instant value. If you wanted to do that today, you'd have to run pen tests. You'd have to bring in threat intel. If you wanted to get as early as Fletch, you have to go buy dark web data. Like, it's impossible for a small company. And then the other things that Fletch does that makes it very palatable for a smaller company is, like, in 10 minutes, you can connect your single sign-on provider. Who doesn't use one when you're getting more modern, right? Like I was just explaining a second ago. And so as you're getting more modern, having an SSO is really important, but getting visibility into what your people are doing with that information is even more important. If you can correlate that with a threat landscape, you can start giving people an early warning system of the threats that matter to them every single morning. And so that very simple value prop of helping people know the threats that matter to them with very low overhead. They don't have to model data. They don't have to buy a SIEM. They don't have to go buy all these tools and point products enables a much smaller organization to have the security of a very large organization. That's why we're seeing a lot of early success and a lot of early collaboration and usage.
Okay. So essentially what you're saying is the key to reaching the SME market is to just keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, it really is. And this is something like, it's, and when people think simple, they're like, well, I want a point product. It's like, well, no, it's not being a point product. It's making it really simple UI for them. It's doing the work for them, which is probably the best use of AI you can do. Everybody thinks AI, the great use of AI is to do a chat bot. No, it's probably not. Humans aren't that creative. They're not actually going to ask all the right questions. There are many people who are really creative, but the thing is they're not the creative asking questions on the spot. Your mind will go blank if you don't have a specific thing to ask. So use the AI to model the data, use the AI to do the drudgery, and then give the person things that can inspire their creativity. That's a big motto that we have done. And that makes it so we can sell things at like 100x cheaper than they would buy anything that is comparable. And so it's interesting when people try to compare us to products, you're like, you're comparing us to a product that is 100x the price. So yeah, you can go buy that, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, this thing's out of the box, it works, it solves 80% of your problem. If you want it, it works a second, or you can spend 6 to 8 months tooling something out, which has historically been cybersecurity.
The companies that have been focused on Fortune 1000 companies are too big and complex to actually make that transition, which is one of the reasons why they're in trouble. I mean, that's the premise of what I'm doing all this about, because it looks like they are in trouble, that companies are, they're not, may not be cutting their budgets, but they're freezing them and they're not going to buy anything new because they've got too much already. I mean, I was talking to Qualys and they got really pissed off when I pointed out that their annual report said that 96% of their revenue comes from current customers, which means they're not growing. And they got downgraded by that, by the stock market. So I'm going, okay, well, there's a real problem. They didn't like that being that, having that pointed out, but there seems to be a potential for real growth, and you don't need to have, there's that, this argument about point tools. You just brought it up. I had this discussion with Rohit Ghai, who made a statement in his keynote at RSAC that, you know, having a large integrated product was the way to go. And I said, okay, that's fine for big companies like you're probably selling to.
Yeah.
But it's not that good for SMEs, small to medium enterprises, who can't afford it, number one, don't know how to use it, number two, and don't have all the problems that you've got. I mean, you said you can get them 80% of the way to where they need to be.
Exactly.
And if we're to agree with what most people say, that 90% of the problem is just personal errors, it sounds like if you can do training and they can do something like you, they don't really need to worry that much about being breached.
Yeah, and so that's actually why we're seeing so much. It's that simplicity, it's an instant value. And then I would say it's the third thing is that you diving into being able to give them progressive disclosure. So it's like, hey, let's solve problem one, then let's solve problem two, and they can extend our platform as we go. And so it's like, we help you on the external side, which is obvious to almost anybody. If they're like an IT person, not even a security specialist, they're like, okay, well, I've been told I need to get a pen test for compliance. It's like, well, that's not really the right reason to do a pen test. The right reason is to keep your hygiene healthy and make your perimeter strong so that you don't get breached. And so why don't we constantly monitor your perimeter for you in a very inexpensive way and tell you which things you got to update and how to update them? So take a much more human-centric, simplistic approach to it. And then layer in, okay, now I think you're ready for the next thing. Connect some data and graduate. And so to your question about Qualys a second ago, that's interesting you bring up they're not growing. I think they're a great vulnerability product. when you combine Qualys with Fletch, we have quite a few customers that do this who are more advanced customers. So as you progress with Fletch, you can connect your vuln scanners. Now, Fletch is an early warning system. We're like 3 to 5 days ahead of the vuln scanners, and I can talk about that later. So that really helps people live in the future. But humans, we procrastinate. And so as things catch up to you, you're going to have vulnerabilities. And so we find the integration with Qualys is really valuable for a lot of people because they join Fletch and Qualys. It's like Fletch and Qualys is like a cheeseburger, but without Fletch, it's like, great, I'm just eating a burger. And these people can jump in there and say, here's the 5 threats that matter to me. Great, Qualys became a lot more valuable in that sense. Instead of giving me a plethora of vulnerabilities that maybe go back to 2010, it's like, no, tell me what adversaries are actually using right now, please. I only have so many hours in the day. I have a tiny business. And I don't need to run Qualys over massive amounts of infra. Like, give me Qualys on a sample data set. And so I can actually be efficient with this spend. And I think that's something that hopefully they start changing.
Okay. So it sounds like you're pretty well integratable into other systems, which is really the biggest problem that companies are saying, or CISOs are saying about what they, the problem they have with most tools is they don't integrate well, but you do.
Oh yeah. So step one, you can start in value day one without integrating anything. Step two, you start integrating into tools you already have, you're already paying for, you don't need to go buy something new. And then step three, if you're a more advanced company, you do have tools like EDR products and vuln scanners, you can integrate them. Or as Fletch teaches you and you graduate further with us, we make the case that it's worth buying these things because you want different layers of protection. We may be your earliest warning system, but as you want more layers of protection, you do want to employ these other services. And then we serve as kind of a hub to get optimum insights out of those things.
How are you being accepted by MSSPs?
I would like to say MSSPs accept us with open arms. I think there's a lot of interest from MSSPs, but when you see that we're the amount of transparency we give the end customer, and the amount of inefficiencies we take out of the system, I think that's actually quite scary for a lot of MSSPs. The smarter ones, the more efficient ones really lean in. They're like, great, this makes us look like superheroes. But there's a lot of MSSPs out there that are checking boxes, that are like, we have people that look at Glass, and it's like, it's kind of very fuzzy what we do. And something like Fletch really shines a light on that. And it also, something like Fletch gives you daily advice on the threats that matter to you. It's like, well, you can go fix those very fast if you don't have to do the research on them. And so part of what we're actually finding is that we negate the need for some of these companies that would potentially go to an MSSP because we make the product problem so simple. Now, for larger MSSPs, smarter MSSPs, we're a superpower. We make it so they can hire cheaper, smart English majors instead of like cybersecurity experts. But that's really a very interesting problem. And you say when you're changing an industry, you don't want to be a neutral product. And so I see that as a really good thing. Hated and loved.
Okay. So what you're saying is that if a company is out looking for an MSSP and they're not using Fletch, they should probably move on.
Yes, because a lot of these guys are using very outdated technologies. They're using proprietary stacks, which are basically, you don't even know what they're using. And then you find out they're basically outsourcing to somebody in the Philippines to stare at at the Glass for you. Like, how secure is that? And it's like, we want to make it somebody else's problem. That's why we use an MSSP. But when it comes down to it, we're actually going to end up with a bigger problem because most of the ones that I've run into, it's like you really don't know if they're amazing or not. And so there are a handful of MSSPs with brand names that are just incredible, and I can name those off the back of my hand. They're great. And I think in the future, we'll end up working with a lot of those.
Okay. So there's your ad. And now, but I want to talk about one more thing. Richard said that investment is going up in cybersecurity, but he thinks it's on track to do $12 billion this year, as opposed to pre-COVID of $25 billion. So we're still way down, and investors, even though cybersecurity is a good place to put money into, they're still being a little bit hesitant. And the last time you and I had a beer, you were talking about how you were turning VCs away. And it was just like last year. And yesterday, yeah, we were supposed to talk, but you got caught in a train after coming back from meetings. And today, just before this interview, you were talking to VCs. How easy is it for you to get through to these VCs, or are you beating them off with sticks?
Okay, so we are different beasts. And so that's why I think there's a lot of interest in us. My background goes 12 plus years back into AI. And so the AI world right now, as it's changing, really starts, like, a lot of people want to talk to me about it. So Fletch fits very nicely in that wheelhouse. We're also a very disruptive company. We're at bottoms up, medium-sized companies, a whole organization. So we're disrupting and serving, because where you've actually seen cyber lately have a lot of problems is a ton of money went into cyber, especially during the pandemic. And these companies got ridiculous valuations. Well, these companies only sell the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000. And with those kinds of valuations, they have to have huge price tags. And that's why I think you've seen a very big shift where you have a bunch of cyber investment, but they're all going after the same set of customers. And people are really, I kind of was joking with you earlier, but it's like people are just like repeating old things. And so when you see innovative, different things like us, so that's why I think we actually have a lot of interesting things. We're different. We're cracking a new model. We're category creating. Like, saying what Fletch is actually even hard for me, because it's like, we're this correlation engine. We're this, like, this live ahead of threat thing that's never been able to exist before. And when you look at a lot of the other things, it's like, well, this is the ninth cloud company I've heard of this week, this cloud security company this week, or this the 100th identity company I've heard of this week. And so you have a lot of companies doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So it makes it very noisy to have a company right now. It makes it hard for CSOs and IT people to even buy it.
So there is a reckoning coming for the cybersecurity industry, who have become rather complacent in the midst of their great popularity. But it can be fixed. And there are companies like Fletch that are showing that. And there are people out there that are ready to help you. If you are a cybersecurity company, they're going to help you figure out how to reach that market. And organizations like Cyber Protection Magazine are here to help the people that are buying this stuff figure it out. And to that point, we are going to be having a presence at the ITSA 360 conference in Europe this year. In fact, we are a publication of record for them. We're going to be having a printed version that's going to be passed out to all the attendees, 20,000 of them. And we are looking for sponsors. If you really want to figure out how to rise above the noise and reach the 80% of the market that you're trying to reach, this is your opportunity. Not only for people who are trying to reach that market, but also for the people who are in the market. We're here to actually help explain this stuff. One of the nice things that Grant said about what we do off microphone was that Cyber Protection Magazine is the most honest voice in the cybersecurity industry. So we appreciate that comment. We're humbled by it, but it's exactly what we're trying to do. So that's been Crucial Tech for this week. My name is Lou Covey. You can contact me at cyberprotectionmagazine.com. Or you can just leave a message on the Spotify channel. If you listen on Spotify, I can get a one-minute voice message there. But best is just to send us an email. And we'd love to hear from you if you have any comments, questions, or if you're interested in being a sponsor and fixing this problem of getting objective information out that can help you sell your product. Thank you for listening. This has been a Footwasher Media production.